Vedanta Swami Namaste. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirvasesa Sinyavadi Paskachade Satarani Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Stashi Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Stam Vanchakalpa Chubhyascha Kipasindhubhyeva Chapatichanam Pavanevya Vaishnavevi Namo Namaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Vasudevaya.
It's March 7th, 2016, Skype class over Hilo, Hawaii. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 10, Divisions of the Creation, Text 7. Tadvi lokya viyad vyapi.
Tadvi lokya viyad vyapi.
Pushkaram yad adhishtitam.
Pushkaram yad adhishtitam.
Anena lokam pradlinam.
Anena lokam pradlinam.
Kalpita smitya chintayat.
Kalpita smitya.
Tatvilokya.
Tatvilokya.
Looking into that. Vyat vyapi. Extensively widespread. Pushkaram. The lotus. Yat.
Yat.
That which. Adhistitam. He was situated. Anena. By this. Lokan. All the planets. Praklinan. Previously merged in dissolution. Kalpita asmi. I shall create. Iti. Thus. Achintayat. He thought. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter he saw that the lotus on which he was situated was spread throughout the universe, and he contemplated how to create all the planets which were previously merged in that very same lotus. Purport. The seeds of all the planets in the universe were impregnated in the lotus on which Brahma was situated. All the planets were already generated by the Lord, and all the living entities were also born in Brahma. The material world and the living entities were all already generated in seedling forms by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Brahma was to disseminate the same seedlings all over the universe. The real creation is therefore called Sarga, and later on the manifestation by Brahma is called Visharga. Tadvilokya viyad vyapi pushkaram yad adhistitam anena lokam pragninam kalpita smit yachintayat. Thereafter he saw that the lotus on which he was situated was spread throughout the universe, and he contemplated how to create all the planets which were previously merged in that very same lotus. So here the Lord is given Brahma seeds. He says, Aham Bija Pratapita, I am the seed-giving father. Krishna also says, I am the eternal seeds. So he's given Lord Brahma the seeds of all of the planets, all of the places. And he's also given Lord Brahma the seeds of all of the jivas. And now Lord Brahma needs to take those seeds and, as Prabhupada says here in this purport, he has to disseminate the seedlings. So the seedling is a sprouted seed. He's got to take these seedlings, he's got to sprout them, and he's got to put them in their proper places all over the universe. So this is the general principle of the relationship between the Lord and his servants. As Srila Prabhupada said, the real creation is Sarga. The real creation is done by the Lord. And that done by the servant of the Lord, by Lord Brahma, is Visharga. It's a secondary creation. And it's like that for all of us. We are all secondary creators. I was speaking to a wonderful devotee who gave class recently in a very difficult situation. And she was saying that she was so nervous that she didn't have time to prepare or the ability to prepare, which is unusual for her. And she said that when she was giving the class, she simply felt that she was being empowered, and she didn't feel any pride, that it was all simply the Lord, Guru. So this is, as we were been talking about in these chapters, the mood of Lord Brahma, that he doesn't have the pride of being the creator, that the seeds are given by the Lord, the intelligence is given by the Lord, everything. Right? The Lord gives everything. And this is true for our material life, and it's also true for our bhakti. So in general, Krishna gives the seeds of anything that we want to do. How is he giving the seeds? Well, he's giving the elements, Bhumir, Apanalo, Vayu, Kammano, Budhare, Vicha, Agnir, Mahiga, Ganamam, Bhumaru, Dushastra, Kalastatatma, Manasi, Chichigatrihani, Yasmad, Bhavanti, Vibhavanti, Vishanti, Yamcha. So he's giving all of the ingredients, just like if you go to cook in a kitchen, and it already has the ingredients, they're already there. Not only the ingredients, but the pots and the stove. You know, if you just go into an empty building and then you have to provide all of that, you have to buy a stove and you have to buy the pots and you have to buy the ingredients or you have to grow them and prepare them. So Krishna's providing all of those things. Krishna's providing, here's a place, here's a stove, here's a pot, here's the ingredients. Or, you know, here is the easel, here's the canvas, here's the paints. So he's providing all of the necessities. Like if you hire a gardener, so you give them seeds and you give them a source of water and they have some land that has some sun, and then you talk about the plant. So Krishna is also giving us intelligence, right? Matas matir ganam apohanam cha. So he's giving us not only the intelligence of how to plant the seeds, but the memory of how we have planted seeds before, and even the forgetfulness of anything that's not needed or would be a hindrance to planting these seeds. And people ask many times, well, if I've lived other lifetimes, why can't I remember them? Because the simple answer is that if we were to walk around with conscious memory of all of our previous lives, in most cases that would be a great hindrance to what we're trying to achieve in this life. We wouldn't be able, you know, if you died with someone as your enemy, but you had some desire to rectify the situation with them, if you remember your enmity, it will be very difficult to rectify it, right? We have that experience even in this life, if someone's offended me, insulted me, cheated me, so forth. If I keep meditating on the ways in which they've hurt me, it's very hard to fix my relationship with them. What do they say? Forgive and forget. So Krishna has this forgetfulness, that we forget when we're going for our, in this life, we forget, this person did this for me, this person hurt me, and so forth. So that's part of giving us the proper facility. And then we grow the garden, we produce the painting, we cook the meal, whatever it is that we're doing in our life. And of course, the foolish person takes all credit for that. Ahankara vimudhatma karta hamiti manite. The foolish person says, I am the doer. Whereas actually, you know, we're not the doer. Because even our ability, Krishna is the ability. Not only is he our intelligence and our memory, but he's even our ability. And we all know that we can be full of energy and health and enthusiasm in the morning, and in the afternoon, we can become ill with a fever and some sort of disease, and we're vomiting and whatever, and we lose our ability. We can't do anything. We have to just lie down in bed. And I remember Satsuki Maharaj writing about that with disease, that the world goes on without you, and you get to see that you're not really very important to whatever's happening in your life. And somehow other people jump in and take over, or things don't get done, and it just doesn't really matter anymore. So that's our ability. Krishna can take it away in a moment. He does it regularly, right? Or we have to sleep at night. You know, we're doing something, and we're creating something, we're working on something, and then it gets to a point where exhaustion takes in. The mind doesn't work anymore, you can't force your brain. People try to force their brain with different chemicals, but you can't force your brain to work anymore, and you can't force your body to work anymore, right? The military's always experimenting with what kind of chemicals can they give their soldiers so they don't need to sleep for days on end. But this is Krishna. The point is that Krishna is giving the ability. He's giving, he can take away, and he's giving all the ingredients, he's giving all the intelligence, he's giving everything. So therefore, we are secondary creators. So what kind of things does Krishna give us the seed for? Well, he certainly gives us the seed and the water and the sunshine and the ability and the intelligence, as we I've already indicated, for things having to do with our material desires. Ye tamam prapadyante tam sadaiva bhajamyaham eko bahunam yo viradati kama. So Krishna is fulfilling all of our desires. He particularly knows our desires by what we've thought about at our time of death. Yam yam bhavi sram bhavam tvaja chante kalevram tam tam eva dikantaya sarata bhava bhavita. So the time of death is a very clear indicator of our real desires. I remember when Bhakti Tirtha Swami was diagnosed with cancer, he wrote something about how death strips away everything that is false. Right? Whatever is superfluous in our life, as soon as we know, oh, I'm going to die very soon, then we jettison those things. We start to just keep what is real, and at the very last moment, we are going to grab out for whatever is of primary importance to us in our life, a person or activity, a place or whatever, that really, that's most meaningful for us. And that moment is therefore the greatest indicator to the soul themselves, to the rulers of the universe, and to God, as to what we really want. And of course, we also demonstrate what we really want, what are our desires, by our actions in this life. You know, I can say, I really want such and such, but if I don't do anything in that direction, then my want for that is not very strong. Right? We were studying recently with the kids about the modes of nature and about determination. So determination in the mode of ignorance is just dreaming. Oh, I'd like to do this, I'd like to do that. Maybe someday I'll do this. You know, when everything's right and I don't have any problems in my life, like that's ever going to happen, then, you know, I'll do this and I'll do that. So that's not, those thoughts are not what is not the kind of thing that Krishna gives the seed for. What Krishna gives the seed for are thoughts that have translated into action. Karma literally means action. So what have we done? And if someone says, well, I really want spiritual life, but they spend their time doing material things. Or if someone says, I really want material life, but they spend their time doing spiritual things. You know, I really want to spend time with my family, and instead I do other things. So this is really how the Lord knows what seeds to give us. Right? I like to tell the story. One of my godbrothers, actually two of my godbrothers were speaking together at the temple. I happened to be overhearing their conversation. And one said to the other, yeah, I haven't been coming to the temple, but my heart's at Mangal Artik. And the other one said, why don't you bring the rest of your body? So this is the real indicator to the Lord of what seeds that we want, because he is fulfilling our desires, and therefore he gives us whatever seeds we want. Now we may say, well, a lot of the seeds that have planted in this life are not things that I want. You know, I may be dealing with poverty, I may be dealing with disease or legal trouble or enemies or something like that. And I don't want these things. But factually, we did want these things. We just didn't understand what we really wanted. We didn't understand what we really wanted. And I remember getting some glimpse of this. Many years ago, I had a student who had some severe mental psychological problems which rendered him incapable of doing anything that was difficult, intellectually, mentally, socially, emotionally. Although he was a teenager, he was really functioning at the level of a very young child on in all measures, emotionally also, relationship-wise also. He was just simply didn't have the capacity. And one time he was talking to me about how he didn't like to do things that were hard, how he only wanted to do things that were very easy. Because we would try to challenge his abilities and stretch his abilities a little bit so that, you know, he could learn more. And he would strongly resist any effort to grow and stretch in that way. And it, all of a sudden I understood that this was his desire. He wanted to only do things that were easy. He didn't want to do anything that was difficult. So he was given a situation where he was only capable of doing things that were easy. So he had a good built-in excuse in that life. He simply couldn't do anything that was difficult. And I'm sure that the soul didn't really understand that, well, you know, if I want to only do things that are easy, I'll lose the capacity for doing something that's difficult. Or, you know, someone who says, I want to make it on my own, I don't want to have anyone's help, I just want to do everything myself. So they may be in a situation where nobody helps them, or where all the help that others give them, you know, is taken away in some respect. And then once we're in that situation, we may say, why isn't anybody helping me? Why isn't anybody helping me? So this is the problem, that we are getting what we desire without any question whatsoever. But we may not understand what does it mean to get what we desire. I mean, on a very simple basis, when we were having a logic class with a couple of the teenagers the other day, and one of them made the relevant point that people want fame, but they don't understand that once they become famous, then there's going to be so many downsides. Right? The really famous people, they're likely to be beset by thieves. And nowadays, not only thieves of their money, but thieves of their identity, thieves of their, you know, email and banking passwords and so many things like that. And when they go anyplace, they're so much harassed by the public and the paparazzi that they go out in disguise. So here they've wanted fame and they've worked for fame, and then when they get fame, they intentionally hide themselves so that they will not be famous. And it's a very simple example. And even though people know that fame comes with such a result, still they try for fame and they think, well, you know, I'll be able to handle it, or something like that. So in this way, we get the seeds of our desires. Krishna notices what do we really want. He notices what we really want by our body, mind, and words, particularly by our activities, particularly by what we do, and particularly by our thoughts at the various times that we leave our various bodies. And taking those two things together, our mental desires, what we talk about, but particularly our activities and our thoughts at the time of death, Krishna gives us the seeds, the water, the sun, the intelligence, the memory, and the forgetfulness, so that we can grow our seedlings. And of course, our seedlings produce other seeds. And Rupa Goswami speaks about this, how sinful activity and anything that's not bhakti is more or less sinful activity. You know, you can say, well, I want to build a hospital for the AIDS orphans in Africa. How is that sinful activity? But ashrayat hutam datam tapastatam kritam jayat asad ichyutite parta nachitat prayatu no iha. If it's done without faith in God, then it's asat. So Bill Gates famously or infamously said, I can do much better good for the world on the Sunday by doing things other than going to church. So if a person thinks like that, if they think, I'm going to help the world, I'm going to do some good without faith in God, without dependence on God, who's giving them the seeds, the water, the sun, the intelligence, etc., then it's more or less a sinful activity. You know, I may not be raping and killing and burning and so forth, and maybe building hospitals and curing diseases, but the essence of sin is the sense of that I am the doer, that I am separate from Krishna. It's sin because it is something that is false. It is something that is not in harmony with truth. So any activity like that produces a plant. It's a little seedling, and it produces eventually, of course, other seeds. And we become entangled, as Krishna says in the 15th chapter, like an upside-down banyan tree that's very complicated. And our activities produce seeds of new activities and new situations. And pretty soon we're so entangled and we just haven't the clue as to how we got where we are and how we can get out of it. We can't even see the beginning activity. We can't see what led to what and so forth. But this is how Krishna gives the seeds on a material level. On bhakti, Krishna also gives the seed. Although, of course, Rupa Goswami explains that bhakti does not come from any other source. It is the eternal situation of all living entities. And Lord Chaitanya says that, Jivera Swarupaya Krishnara Nitya Dasha. He says that we are all eternally servants of Krishna. It's not even just that we are eternally, you know, Najayate Miyate Vakadachid Nayam Bhutva Bhavitava Nabuyaha Ajonicha Shasvatoyam Prano Nahanyate Hani Maneshire. That's all negative. The soul is just never born, never dies, never changes. I cannot be harmed by any weapon. Well, if the soul never changes, what is it that never changes? What is the soul's swabhava, swarupa? The soul's swabhava or swarupa, words which are used frequently in the Shastra. Our nature is Krishna dasa, to be a servant of the Lord. That implies some sort of identity and some sort of activity. It's, so it's not how the impersonalists claim that our original situation does not involve any identity or any activity, but rather we have an identity of Krishna's servant and we have an activity of Krishna's servant. And if we are persons, as Krishna says, and never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. If we are unchangeable and we are persons, then our identity with Krishna as Krishna's servants must be personal, which means it must be individual and specific. Otherwise, it's not personal. And that's what it means to be a person. It means to be a unique person. It means that I have likes and dislikes. I have a nature. I have certain activities that are distinct from that of other persons. It's not just some sort of a geographical separation. So that is always there. It's always there. We are not, as spiritual beings, we are not some sort of blank field. When we say that the Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Bija, when we say that the Guru gives the seed of bhakti, does that mean that there was no bhakti in the soul prior? No, that's not possible. Then the soul would not be changeless. Then the soul would not be eternally Krishna's servant. So that is this giving of the seed by Guru and Krishna really is an awakening of the existing seed, or we can call it a planting of the existing seed. So you could say, you know, I'm giving the seed. Just like it, even materially, we take the seeds and the soil and the water and the sunshine and the ability that Krishna has given us and we plant them and we grow them, etc. So in a similar way, the association of devotees, right? Sadhusanga, sadhusanga, sarva shastra koi, lava matra sadhusanga, sarva siddhi hoy. What is this sarva siddhi that comes from the association of the Vaishnavas is that they activate the seeds. That's what Lord Brahma is doing. Lord Brahma is activating these seeds. He's taking the seeds and he's turning them into seedlings. So this is really what when we're talking about, they plant the seed of bhakti. The seed of bhakti is already there in the heart. Rupa Goswami very clearly says it's not to be gained from any other source. And the sadhana given, the practice given by the guru from the shastra, it is not, as Prabhupada also says, Rupa Goswami also says, it is not that this sadhana develops something that is not there. For example, a person can learn to do, you know, ballet dancing, but ballet dancing is not integral to the body. It's not that if you just leave a body by itself that it will walk around on the edge of its toes. And in fact, doing ballet dancing does all kinds of harm to the body because it's not natural to the body. But by practice, one can learn to dance around on the tips of one's toes and balance like that. That can be done by practice. So many things can be done by practice. So we don't mean this sadhana is not that kind of practice that it's doing something artificial. But it's the practice that, just like we have a baby here, and the baby is, you know, trying to sit up and putting herself up on her arms and legs, and now she's pushing herself on the ground. So she's practicing to do something which is inherent in the body. Walking is inherent in the body. Holding our head up is inherent in the body. A brand new baby, within moments of birth, if you hold them up and put their feet on the ground, they will make a walking motion. So this seed of bhakti really means that by the grace of the sadhus, by the grace of the devotees, the seed is planted, it is activated. You know, sometimes the scientists find a very old seeds. I think they found like 3,000 or 5,000-year-old garbanzo bean, chickpea seeds in an Egyptian tomb. I may be getting the details wrong. And they put them in water, and they started to grow. The same has happened sometimes with hibernating creatures, especially hibernating frogs. They'll find a hibernating frog, and when they expose the frog to the air and water, then the frog comes alive. So it is like that. The seed of bhakti is dormant in the heart of a conditioned soul. Of course, it is manifesting. Even the dormant seed of bhakti manifests in the living entity's desire to have love and attachment in the world. It manifests in the desire to love one's own body. We take care of our own body the way that the devotee takes care of the deity. We take care of our mind. We take care of our family and friends, our pets, our home, our cars, everything. So this is, it's really the, all this care and love and affection that we have is really the manifestation of this dormant bhakti that's there. So when we talk about the seed of bhakti, we are talking about that the real seed becomes alive and awakened, and it starts to grow. Of course, when a seed first starts to grow, it first starts generally, it first starts under the ground, generally. Some seeds start growing above ground, but generally it starts growing below the ground. And so at first you can't see the growth of the seed. And in fact, such is described in the Shastras, we were talking about this yesterday, this agyata sukriti. Agyata means unknowing. The person engages in acts of bhakti without knowing what they're doing, without understanding what they're doing. There's no visible seed. And then at a certain point, the seed gets big enough that it peaks up above the ground. And with ordinary seeds, the first two leaves are not the true the first two leaves are not the true leaves of the plant. They're seedling leaves, which eventually drop off and are replaced by the actual leaves of the plant. So as our bhakti seed first starts to grow, we may have this false confidence that I'm a very spiritual person. And eventually the true spirituality of the person comes out. And this is true not only for our bhakti in a general sense, and as we advance our bhakti in a specific sense, that I am Krishna's servant, I am Krishna's lover, I am Krishna's mother or father, but it's also true for all of the services that we do even in this world in bhakti. So just like Krishna gives the seeds for one's karma, which one grows and waters, and etc., he also gives us the seeds for our different services. So if we have a service to build a temple, if we have a service to print books, if we have a service to teach children, if we have a service, whatever, you know, to manage the accounts, to distribute books, to decorate the temple, to make flower garlands, or whatever service that we have, and Krishna gives us, again, the all of the initial ingredients and all of the means to do it and all of the intelligence to do it. All of this is supplied by Krishna. And then when we may ask, looking at all these things, how Krishna gives us the seed of our karmic material desires, how Krishna awakens the eternal seed of our bhakti in our heart, how Krishna gives us the facility for our service, then we may ask the question, well, you know, why do we exist at all? If really Krishna is doing all of these things, why isn't there just Krishna? And we talked about this the other day, that the purpose is ananda. The purpose is ananda. You know, why do people marry? Why do people have children? Because they want to increase their bliss. They want to increase their relationships. Why do we have friends? Why do we have society? Even a person who stays alone, you know, they may develop some relationship with the creatures in the forest. So why? Because we want this ananda. And Krishna enjoys seeing his parts and parcels and developing their love for him, and he developing his love for them. Well, this is very obvious even in this world between the parents and the children. So you give your children everything. You give your children the clothing, you give them the toys, you give them all the ingredients. And when they use those things in a way that's pleasing to themselves and to you, that benefits themselves and you, then you feel very happy. This is in fact, we feel happier than when we do things ourselves. Right? When I do something myself, I may get some sort of satisfaction out of it. It's said in the Bhagavatam in the 10th canto that Krishna looked out at the beauty of the Vrindavan forest, and he was so much enjoying, this is my shakti, this is my energy. So we have some idea like this, you know, we do something and we look at it and we say, yes, this is my energy. How wonderful is my energy? But we feel happier, and we have this experience, we feel happier when we provide the ingredients, the seeds, and the intelligence to someone for whom we have affection. And they take those things and they do it. I've been studying recently about a difference in leadership styles and teaching styles, and the particular theory perspective I'm looking at is called the diminisher versus the multiplier. So the diminisher goes into an organization or as a teacher or as a some sort of director, and their mood is, I'm smart and I'm capable. And everybody says, oh, yes, they're so smart and they're so capable. But they shut down other people's capability and other people's intelligence. And the multiplier goes into an organization or as a teacher and makes everybody else feel smart and capable. And it was really interesting, some of these studies, that when people are in the presence of a multiplier, that they often feel that they're giving more than 100%. They'll say, yeah, I gave 120% and I'm tired, but I'm fulfilled. Whereas people around the diminisher will say, I'm only giving 20%, I'm only giving 50%. So there's some kind of mode of ignorance satisfaction to going in and saying, you know, I'm the only doer and all of you are my peons and all of you simply do what I direct you to do. And, you know, I jump in and fix whatever you're doing. And then, but there's a much greater pleasure of being somebody who's a facilitator and somebody who watches other people grow. Just like Srila Prabhupada told Jamuna, I talk about this a lot, how if she didn't teach cooking, that she would become envious. Because, you know, I'm going to know something that all of you don't know. But when you get others to do it, then you become full of compassion and love. So Krishna being non-envious and a multiplier rather than a diminisher, he delights in stepping into the background. That's his happiness. And he's giving everything. In a sense, he's doing everything, but he steps into the background. And for the conditioned souls who want him to be in the background, he's not even seen at all. But even for the great devotees like Arjuna, Krishna takes the role of a chariot driver, which in those days, you know, sometimes the kshatriyas would also drive the chariots, but the chariot driver was a servant. And he takes that role of the servant of his devotees. So his devotee gets all the credit. So we should ask ourselves, well, what seeds do I have? What do I have? What plants are growing in my garden? What seeds do I have? What am I doing with them? Do I have some plants I've been cultivating which are not what I really want? You know, sometimes you look out in your garden and there's all kinds of plants there that are not what you want. Maybe I get rid of them before they produce more seeds and proliferate. And do I have seeds that I'm not taking care of that I do really want? You know, what should I water? What should I fertilize? What should I cultivate? What are my real desires? So that's the question we should be asking. We all have seeds and little plants and big plants of both our material desires and our spiritual desires. So what do we want to give our attention to? What do we want to grow as little seedlings, as little plants? So Lord Brahma, he's been given the seeds of creation of the universe. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to be a creator in Krishna's service, but he wanted to be a creator. So this is what we should be asking ourselves. What's growing in my garden? What seeds have I not even planted? How am I taking care of things? So questions, comments?
Thank you for your class. That was beautiful. I have a question. Lord Brahma, as we are studying here in the Bhagavatam, is in charge of the material creation, but basically to create the forms of the material creation. But don't the consciousness or the spirit souls come directly from Vishnu, Shiva? In other words, Shiva, when comes in contact with material nature?
Yes, that is Sadashiva, who's beyond the material world. and who has a later manifestation as the son of Lord Brahma produced through his forehead. But yes, through Lord Shiva, he's placed the living entities in the material world. Yes, that is correct. Okay, I see a question from Harsh Prabhu. He says, what if we want in the past and present are contradictory? So if they're contradictory, then either we will get them in different lifetimes or different parts of our lifetime, or we will get one and then, you know, give it up. Most of us have contradictory desires. I think that's the general problem. Even those of us who want spiritual life, I can fairly say that most people who want spiritual life also still have some desires for material life. So we often have contradictory desires. At a certain point in our spiritual advancement, we're going to have to face and take care of those contradictory desires. That's called anartha nivritti. But otherwise, we get our contradictory desires usually consecutively. It's one of the reasons for the forgetfulness of death. Anybody else? Yes.
Yeah, I unmuted. Go ahead.
We hear Shiva Ratri. Today is Shiva Ratri. It's interesting, Mahesh, who mentioned something about Sarashiva. Some Gaudiyas, they follow this day. They put some importance on this day. I remember during Srila Prabhupada's time, there was some emphasis on this. Do you know anything about that?
The only thing I know is that in the 10th canto, it mentions that the residents of Vrindavan would occasionally, not yearly, but sometimes they would celebrate it. And one time they even traveled, where was it? Ambika something. To worship Lord Shiva on Shivaratri. That was when Nandamaraj got swallowed by that snake and Krishna saved him. And Prabhupada notes that although ostensibly they went to worship Shiva, they came back more attracted to Krishna. The result of their observance of Shivaratri was their affection for Krishna increased. But yeah, they did sometimes. I mean, we have acharyas talking about, I think in Ananda Vrindavan Champu, how the residents of Vrindavan celebrate Raksha Bandha, you know, the brother-sister festival. And these were not things that Srila Prabhupada generally instituted in this time. But certainly the residents of Vrindavan celebrated these different festivals. Or, you know, the holy festival. I mean, now there's a lot of ISKCON centers celebrating holy. In Prabhupada's time, we didn't do that. That doesn't mean he didn't want us to do it. We just simply didn't. Prabhupada wrote to Tamal Krishnamurti that we can have a festival every day. He did write that we should have a festival every Sunday. You know, some special theme festival every Sunday. I don't think that many temples took that up, but that was an instruction that Srila Prabhupada gave, or a suggestion perhaps. In other words, you know, one Sunday you have a swing festival, one Sunday you have a, I don't know, you could look at the letter and see where Prabhupada talks about the different festivals that could be had once a week. Mahalakshmi, yes?
How to recognize the seeds before they sprout?
How to recognize the seeds before they sprout? Well, for the material seeds, We want to fry them.
Yes.
You know, we don't even have to go through and recognize all of them. So just like if you plant a garden, you can do something called mulch. So when you mulch your garden, you put something over the ground where you haven't put your plants, and it prevents the other seeds from growing. Right? Sometimes what they'll do is they'll put some black plastic over the ground even before they start planting. If they're going to just plant seeds rather than seedlings, the farmers can put some black plastic over the ground, and the sun heats up the ground to the point that all the little weed seeds are fried, and then they remove the plastic and they plant their seeds. Also, we put different kinds of mulch, organic and inorganic, on the soil to prevent the other seeds from germinating. So it's not that we have to go through the soil and look at every single seed that's there and examine every single seed. I mean, my goodness, that would take a long time. This is what people try to do through psychology and even through past life regressions, to look at all the little seeds of karma and figure them out and, you know, zap them one by one. But that's not going to be very efficient. In the meantime, we're accumulating so many more seeds, and the seeds of our fully mature plants are also starting to come to fruition. And it's kind of like you're cleaning. You know, my kids at one point had a home at Govardhan, and it was so dusty there that even if you cleaned every surface three times a day, everything was still covered with dust. So it's something like that, that materially, if you try to fry all your little seeds and identify all them, while you're doing that, other seeds are sprouting. And so Krishna compares this material world to an upside-down banyan tree. Have you ever seen a big banyan tree? They're very complicated. And so I like to give the example of Alexander the Great. Prabhupada gives a different example of Alexander the Great and a different story he likes to tell. But I like to tell this one, how when he was trying to conquer the world as he knew it at the time, so he came to a place where there was a knotted rope, and was called the Gordian Knot, and the story was that anyone who could untie this knot would be a world conqueror. Many people had tried and failed. So Alexander the Great, he took his sword and he just cut through the knot. And this is what Krishna says in the 15th chapter, that you should cut down this tree with knowledge and detachment. He says nobody can tell where it begins, where it ends. Trying to sort all that out will simply be a frustrating experience for us. As far as the seeds of bhakti, so that will come naturally with hearing and chanting. As we're hearing and chanting, as we're serving, then naturally our little bhakti seeds will sprout, and we'll start to become aware of our eternal personality. We'll start to become aware of the services that Krishna wants us to do. That can't be forced. I mean, it can be, but the results of forcing, Prabhupada says, are not good. The problem with the sahajis is they're trying to force. It doesn't work. So, you know, in modern agriculture, they try to force seeds. We talked about this last week, I think. They try to force seeds. They try to force animals to mature faster than they are doing by nature. But the result of that is just a weak and diseased animal or plant. It doesn't work well. So there's, you know, Prabhupada gives the example of the newly married girl. He says, naturally, the newly married girl wants a child. I don't know nowadays what anybody wants. It's kind of odd. People who say they don't want children, I don't know. I can't figure out what's going on in modern society. But he said, generally, you know, newly married girl wants a child. He said, but it's not instant. It's not that on the day of the wedding she's handed a baby. And I also find it interesting that Srila Prabhupada will say that naturally, if she serves her husband and there's affection between husband and wife, there will be children. Prabhupada gives that example all the time, that children are a natural result of marriage. Again, somehow we don't seem to think that way in modern society. Even a lot of devotees don't think that way. But in time, she'll have a child, if they're healthy. So this is the principle, that are the seeds of bhakti, they will grow naturally in their proper time. if we engage in the process of devotional service, and particularly we need to engage in an archanivritti, because otherwise our little bhakti plant will be strangled by so many weeds. We have to make sure that we don't have any crazy elephants running in our garden, and so forth. Otherwise, you know, we have our little seeds and we're watering our little seeds, but our elephants are trampling it, you know, our slugs are eating it, and it has to keep trying to grow again and again and again, and then we're watering the weeds all around it, and so forth. So as far as our karmic seeds, we really don't want to examine them in depth. Unless Krishna asks us to, unless Krishna shows us some particular desire that's really impeding our bhakti, and he asks us to really look at it and deal with it. But in general, those are automatically burned by the process of bhakti. I hope that answers your question. I'm not really sure exactly what you were asking. Yeah, I don't know why there's terrible sound. The static is coming from my speakers. So there's some. It's from someone else's mic.
Yeah, and I can't tell who.
And as far as breaking up, my upload connection here is very poor. I mean, at least at this time in the morning, no one else is on the computer using up bandwidth. But in general, the upload connection here is really, really lousy. Does anyone else have another question, comment? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.